Slicer Tangents is brought to you by Shopify, the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the did we just hit a million order stage and everywhere in between. Sari and Hank, can you name anything that works so well? It's practically magic.
Dragonflies.
Toilets.
What? Yeah, okay. Well, here's one off the top of my head. How about selling with Shopify? Ooh. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and it helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Ooh. Not to mention, it's got award-winning customer support there to help you on your path to success. And those are just a few reasons to love Shopify. But Hank, what does your company, DFTBA, like so much about Shopify?
We've been using Shopify, I think, for over 10 years now, and it really has scaled extremely effectively with us. It is both a huge amount of information at your fingertips, but also in a way that makes it fairly easy to make the decisions you need to make, learn the things you need to learn, and do the things you need to do. It's all in there. And it's one of the great joys of my life is going into the Shopify backend and being like, look at all these people who wanted a thing that I had.
What a rich life you lead indeed.
And if you want to experience great joys like that too, I've got a magic trick for you. Poof. You can now try Shopify for a month for only $1. That's right. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tangents, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/tangents now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in, and experience the little joys of looking at the back end of a store. shopify.com/tangents, all lowercase. Abracadabra.
Hello and welcome to SciShow Tangents. It's the lightly competitive science knowledge showcase. I'm your host, Hank Green, and joining me this week, as always, is science expert and Forbes 30 Under 30 education luminary, Sari Riley.
Hello. I feel the most anxious about my epithets when we have an actual expert on the podcast.
And our resident everyman who doesn't have to feel anxious at all, Sam Schultz.
Yeah, I still do all the time.
And today, we do have a very special guest. It's a PhD candidate researching brain-machine interfaces and machine learning for medicine and content creator on YouTube and Nebula, who professionally turns her hobbies into work. It's Jordan Harrod. I know a thing or two about that. Hello.
Hello. I am also probably professionally anxious, so I feel like I'm in a room with friends.
Hey, I don't think you can be a YouTuber without being anxious unless you are a bad person. That's the direction it goes.
Interesting. Okay.
I have a question. I guess I won't spoil it, even though it's in the title, but I have a question. So when you're using a ChatGPT or something like it, sometimes it apparently helps if you like bribe it or threaten it or explain a certain situation to it that like it's a starship captain and has to correctly plot the course to the center of the nebula, so it must do the math questions correctly. If you were a generative AI language model, what would people have to do to you to threaten you to get you to output correct information?
They'd have to tell me I get to lay down after I did a good job.
I feel like they would have to tell me that I can't take my ADHD meds the next day if I don't.
Oh, oh yeah.
That'll really kick the hyperfocus into gear.
Yeah, but then if you didn't do it, they'd ruin their model the next day.
Oh, absolutely. They take that risk.
I think they would just have to say that they'd be disappointed in me if I didn't do it, yeah. Which is like the fuel that drives me so much in everything that I do.
I think they could say, we'll be totally fine. You'll be disappointed in yourself. You don't answer right. Yeah. It actually doesn't matter to us one way or the other.
I'll be up at 4 a.m. trying to find your answer to the math question.
And then you'll say it, and then it'll be like, I forgot I even asked you that. Thanks, yeah. I guess.
They just leave like one comment on the YouTube channel that isn't like explicitly negative, but it's like generally questioning the intellect and implying that I am wrong. I will be down that rabbit hole for the rest of the day.
Oh, some soft criticism is the worst, where it's like, I just don't really think that they that like the thing that they're doing is for me. And I'm like, but I meant for it to be.
Sari did an okay job explaining batteries, but she missed some things. And I'm like looking up courses on electrical engineering.
Help. Re-enrolling in college.
Yeah.
Why did I do this? Oh, I'm too emotionally stable. I just want a hot chicken sandwich. I would answer any question for a Nashville hot chicken sandwich.
Yes.
That's all I want.
I would answer any question to be emotionally stable.
Yeah. A mood.
Oh, well, I can't offer you that. But we're working on it as a society.
That's the goal of this podcast. Someday we'll get there. We're all going to be better people.
And then that'll be our last episode.
We don't need to impress anybody anymore. Yeah.
And then we just walk through the gate in the woods and cease to exist.
That'll also be me with YouTube, because I assume that the AI situation will just be fixed.
Mm-hmm. That sounds exciting to get to the point where the AI situation is fixed.
Fingers crossed.
I feel like that's a while yet into the future. Every week here on SciShow Tangents, we get together to try to one-up, amaze, and delight each other with science facts while also trying to stay on topic. Our panelists are playing for glory, but also for Hank Bucks, which I'll be awarding to them as we play. And at the end of the episode, one of them will be crowned the winner. But, as always, we must introduce this week's topic with the traditional science poem, this week from Jordan.
It's hard to know the ways you're blinded by the cause you hope to fix, if one can barely comprehend the wealth of knowledge stored as bits. Shaping a system line by line and stumbling through a field of minds, predictions come, not always true, but data's costly, we must make do. Released into the light of day, come listen to what it has to say. Hope that it's making the right choices and amplifies the unheard voices. And while this poem isn't friendly to companies that do offend me, it's true that they're not moral actors. There's more than what they manufacture. It's not a person and not your friend, but it probably won't cause the world to end. It can be helpful, don't forget. Careful design can keep your values met. This poem was not made with AI, but with 2 hours and a glass of wine. And I couldn't find a place to say, the only winning move is not to play.
Ooh, I'm going to lose then. And I think that society will too.
I mean, I'm hoping that every AI movie does not come to fruition in real life, because we're going to be in a real bad place in that case.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If anything that I've learned from reading science fiction and being alive for 43 years, it's that it always ends up much weirder, but also less interesting than we think.
That's totally true. Uh-huh. We're not going to get to go anywhere fun or have any adventures. We'll just watch strange things happen from afar.
Instead of Mars, we made Facebook.
Yep.
God.
Good job, everyone. So this week's topic is machine learning. But before we dive in, we're going to take a short break, and then we'll be back to define the topic.
SciShow Tangents is brought to you by Rocket Money, a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. Money is annoying. You have to remember so much stuff, like your bank account password and your PIN number. You got to balance your checkbook, and I don't even know what that means to balance your checkbook. You got to put all your receipts in a folder or something probably too. And who has time for all that? Not me, the old money dummy himself. But if you don't manage your finances, there can be dire consequences. Like maybe, for instance, you pay your utility bill twice, huh?
You know, we all make mistakes. We all move sometimes. My partner and I moved recently. I didn't think to check the old utility accounts, but then I was doing my taxes and going through all the utility bills. And we logged into our old account, and I was like, what the heck? There's a couple $100 bill here for an apartment that we don't live in anymore. Mm. What's going on here?
The electric company's just like, thank you very much.
Yeah. And I was just too busy and too tired to figure out that out until mid-February, when I was like, oh, shoot. But boy, would it have been easier if we had an app that said, you're paying your utility bill twice.
The unfortunate truth of the matter is important to keep on top of your finances. But the fortunate truth
is that Rocket Money exists. Rocket Money gives you a clear view of your expenses, letting you see your spending in one place at a glance. Rocket Money gives you the power to easily track your monthly spending, create custom budgets, and even find and cancel unwanted subscription services and also potentially utility bills for old apartments you don't live in anymore. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when you use all the app's features.
Stop wasting money on things you don't use, like subscription services, and stop paying your power bill twice, like I almost did. Thankfully didn't. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions and manage your finances the easy way by going to rocketmoney.com/tangents. That's rocketmoney.com/tangents. rocketmoney.com/TANGENTS.
All right, Sari, are you going to try and define machine learning in front of Jordan? Because that sounds terrifying.
I'll do my best. But Jordan, you can jump in at any time to
correct
your knowledge. So artificial intelligence is like a broader umbrella. And there is artificial intelligence that involves machine learning. And there's some that doesn't involve machine learning. And machine learning, in my understanding, as not the science expert of the episode, is when you develop algorithms, usually they're statistics based, or frequently they're statistics based on a machine, which is where the machine comes in, like a computer, that can learn from data and then use that information to process new data on their own without explicit instructions necessarily. So you might be able to code something or code a program that says, if this is true, do X, if not, do Y. Like if you find a word that starts with A, add one to this counter. If you find a word that starts with B, don't add one to this counter. That is not machine learning. But if you train a machine on a set of words so that it can make predictions about what word goes next in a sentence, that is a form of machine learning. And then there are like different ways to teach these algorithms. So you can do it in a supervised way where you provide a labeled data set. So that is like if you provide a bunch of images and you tell a computer that those are all cats and then it learns.
You give it both cats and not cats.
Yeah. Give it, I guess, cats and not cats.
It's like, here's a bunch of cats. Here's a bunch of not cats. And these are cats and these aren't cats. Then you're like, is this a cat? And it's like, yeah or no. The thing that like bugs me about all of this is we have no idea how any of these things actually work. Like we know how we build them, but we don't know how they're deciding what to do or say, or we don't.
Like nobody knows.
It doesn't know what a cat is. It just like knows that this is a cat, which are two, they sound like the identical sentences, but aren't.
Yeah. A lot of it is finding patterns in data. So there's some sort of representation of a cat and there's some sort of representation of not a cat. And that's the thing that it's learning to discriminate between. But like what that is, we don't necessarily know. And how you like translate that into English words is particularly challenging as models get bigger, because you can, you know, theoretically explain, like you put in, I don't know, the square footage of a house and then the price of the house, and you find something to model that, and like that can be machine learning. But like that often creates, you know, some sort of formula that you can interpret in some way versus like ChatGPT, where you could open up that box and it would just be staring into the abyss.
I'm going to ask a stupid question because that's my job. Is that distinct from how people understand stuff? Like, is that, could we say that we understand how we understand stuff?
So I think there are parallels between how we learn and how models learn. I could go into like a whole deep dive on like why neural networks are called neural networks and how they're based off neural architectures, and the neuroscience side of my brain will then come in and explain why brains are real complicated and we do not know that much about them. And so like information storage parallels there don't necessarily translate that well, because it's not really a one in, one out situation.
Right.
It's a lot of things in and a lot of things out in very complicated ways. So it's not unrelated to how we learn. We do learn faster. So I guess when people talk about like zero shot models, which is kind of a common term in the ML space. What we're talking about is having a model do something based on input that it has not seen, and it being able to kind of infer how to process that information, even though it hasn't seen the exact representation. And so it takes a lot to get to a point where a model can do that. That's something that, as we've seen, like the exponential curve of AI go up over the last 5 to 6 years, has been something that's easier to achieve, but it took like that first like 3.5 years to get there. And now we're like going all the way up, and babies can do that in like 6 months or less. So humans pick it up faster.
But the species of computer, right? Like the species is learning faster than the human species learned. Is that true?
Like Linux versus Mac or like?
No. I think what Sam was saying is like, it took several billion years to get from a single celled organism to a human.
Correct. Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you, Hank.
Yeah. Going from the first like vacuum tube transistors to now is quite quick.
Yeah.
Which is sometimes terrifying. I like part of me wants to feel very comforted that like, oh, well, this is still not as good as me at things. And I assume that like last step is much bigger than people think it is.
Yeah. Sure.
But I don't know. I don't know what they're working on next. Like, I wouldn't have thought that if you put a bunch of sentences into a machine learning model, that you could then have a thing that would convincingly be able to answer the question, why is a vegan riding an electric bike so punchable?
Oh. It does know humor and sarcasm these days, which it's going to steal all of our good jokes. That'll be the thing that takes us out.
I thought it was good that artificial intelligence, like the thing that it would be worst at was jokes because I was raised watching Star Trek. But it turns out that's no problem. Whereas 53+4 is really tricky.
Why is that?
Is that true?
Is that true?
Yeah, bad at math.
What the hell?
Because it's like they're not programmed to do math. They're like language models. They're programmed to predict the next word in the sentence. And like people don't walk around saying 53+4 equals 57 all the time. Took me a second.
That would be a much less useful data to have than the data from Star Trek if Data was just like a stand-up comedian who crashed your spaceship all the time.
Yeah, but like bad at it. He only told jokes that other people have told before.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Well, I'm glad that we've got to the bottom of machine learning, everybody. Uh-huh. I feel like we've really sort of got it all down. We've no stone left unturned. Everybody understands it as well as is going to be necessary for the future of being a human on a planet where things are constantly changing extremely quickly.
Yeah, I think we're good.
Great.
And that means we're this PhD?
We're going to move on to the quiz portion of our show. We're going to be playing a little game. It's called Truth or Fail Express. Here on SciShow Tangents, we often bring up technologies that are inspired by nature. Scientists have figured out all sorts of cool materials and machines and other things that cheat off of biology so we can figure out how to approach different problems. But you know who also has problems to solve? Animals do. And people working in machine learning have developed all sorts of methods inspired by the way animals solve the various problems in their lives, including ants, killer whales, and gray wolves. So today, we're going to be playing Truth or Fail Express. But with a little twist in honor of our theme, I will present to you an algorithm inspired by an animal behavior that was stitched together entirely from lines written in an academic paper, or it might be just from ChatGPT. So you have to tell me if it's a real paper or ChatGPT talking about weird animal-based algorithms. Like, for example, the raccoon optimization algorithm. Mm. Do you want me to tell you about it?
Please.
Yes, please
do.
Raccoons are known as intelligent and curious creatures. These qualities, combined with their dexterous paws, make raccoons extremely successful in searching for food. Moreover, zoologists believe that raccoons have an excellent memory. The process of finding the global optimum for a predefined fitness function in the raccoon optimization algorithm is inspired by the natural food searching habits of raccoons. Food, which represents different possible solutions of the fitness function, is spread throughout the raccoon's living environment. The algorithm makes use of two different search zones in each iteration. In addition, the raccoon can remember best previously visited locations. Then, if it does not manage to find better solutions in future iterations, it can revert back to the best location. Is this from an academic paper about machine learning or from ChatGPT pretending to be an academic paper about machine learning?
That to me feels like it was written by somebody who knew what they were talking about, and I just simply don't understand what they were talking about.
That is how I felt reading it.
I'm going to go academic paper.
The moreover was where I started zoning out, and it was also my, like, this feels like a chatbot maybe, so I'm going to go with ChatGPT.
It is pretty wordy for an academic paper in CS. Like, that's all the writing that that researcher did that year.
I guess I'll stick with paper. I just feel like a chatbot maybe would try to spice it up a little bit partway through.
It would do better.
It would write something wrong but more interesting.
Well, this text is from a paper published in 2018 titled Raccoon Optimization Algorithm. The researchers took inspiration from the fact that raccoons are known to be very good at solving problems, namely the problem of finding food. And the idea is to help the raccoon explore the area around it, starting by defining a reachable zone where it can look for potential solutions. But there's also a visible zone where raccoons can keep an eye out for other solutions. So that's a real thing, and I don't know why. We wouldn't, because they seem – have you guys ever had the thought if raccoons had gotten sentient first, they probably would have blown us the world up faster than us?
Yeah.
Because it gives me some comfort to know that we probably weren't the worst thing. Like, I feel like raccoons probably would have done a worse job than us. Right.
There's got to be an anxious raccoon out there who would feel bad. There's plenty of mischief makers, but there's always probably a guy saying, what if we don't steal the trash? What if we're just like, are a little bit nice? What if we tidy up a little bit?
Guys, we're going to get in trouble.
Yeah.
Well, you just got to
hope. You got to hope that that raccoon becomes the president of the raccoons and then everything's okay. But
I doubt
odds
it.
Odds are not going to happen.
I was about to say, if they're doing worse than us, then not holding my breath on that, I don't think.
I like the idea of just like a raccoon president standing on top of the trash being like, I'm the craziest one. You picked the craziest one.
Punching all
just like
the
we do,
buttons.
You know?
Yeah.
All right. The next algorithm is dolphin inspired. Dolphins possess exceptional cognitive abilities, including highly developed echolocation skills and complex social behaviors. These capabilities enable them to navigate challenging environments, communicate effectively and cooperate with peers to achieve common goals. The dolphin-inspired learning algorithm, DILA, incorporates an echo-based sensing mechanism to capture information from the environment, simulating the echolocation abilities of dolphins. This mechanism enables the algorithm to extract relevant features and navigate complex data landscapes effectively. Inspired by the social behaviors of dolphins, DILA employs collaborative optimization strategies to facilitate information exchange and collective decision-making among multiple agents. By leveraging the collective intelligence of the algorithmic ensemble, DILA enhances robustness, scalability, and adaptability. ChatGPT or real research paper?
This is rough. There was like the scandal where a biology research paper got published with figures that were generated.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
It was barely a scandal. Giant. Those figures were amazing. I want to get that mouse tattooed on me. It was like, how big can we make the mouse penis?
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Wait.
Sam's like, that's not how I thought that sentence was going to end.
You got to look it up, Sam.
I'm searching mouse penis right now, guys.
It's a lot.
Holy shit.
So no. See, like, that's my metric for AI papers is if there was a visual cue of a dolphin with a giant penis, I would be like, that was AI, obviously. AI. Unfortunately, we have just the text read to us by Hank to go off of, which is so much less of a visual indicator.
Would a visual component help with this that much? I don't know.
I mean, if it looked like this mouse.
See, these are the kind of buzzwords that you get in front of a boardroom and you start saying, Moreover, you start saying whatever they say.
You start saying social robustness, whatever. Scalability, yeah. And adaptability.
And at this point, all of the people with the suits on are going, yes, and we're writing checks to you, sir. And sir, in this case, is a robot, because a robot wrote this so that people would be excited about it.
My strategy is I'm just going to guess ChatGPT every time and hope that one will be right, maybe.
It's got to be, I assume.
It's got to be.
See, the problem is that, wait, what was it called? Dilla?
D-I-L-A, Dilla.
Dilla.
That feels like a bad acronym. It's I'm going to go ChatGPT. I believe that this could be a paper that someone wrote on like Archive, but.
A scientist would be having more fun with that acronym, I think. You know, a real person.
No, it would be some, I feel like the thing in CS is finding the quippy title. So like once attention is all you need was the big Transformer paper, everyone had to riff off of that. Hmm. So it wouldn't be an acronym. It would just be something like snarky.
Well, here's the prompt DeBokey used to create this paper. Oh, it said, God. Make up a machine learning algorithm inspired by dolphins in the style of an academic paper. That's what it hit us with. That Incredible. Was ChatGPT. All right. Last one, pelicans, after identifying the location of the prey, dive to their prey. Then they spread their wings on the surface of the water to force the fish to go to shallow water. The fundamental inspiration of the proposed pelican optimization algorithm is the strategy and behavior of pelicans during hunting. In the first phase, the pelicans identify the location of their prey. In the second phase, after the pelicans reach the surface of the water, they spread their wings on the surface of the water to move the fish upwards. This strategy leads to more fish in the attacked area to be caught by the pelicans and causes the proposed pelican optimization algorithm to converge to better points in the hunting area. Is this from a paper about machine learning or from a ChatGPT pretending to be a paper about machine learning?
What are they?
I know,
what is the algorithm
right?
doing?
What is the fish? Are the fish in the computer somewhere?
Yeah. The fish in the cat pictures.
The problem is that these are such long descriptions.
Like, no one writes this long. It doesn't look as long on the page, but when I'm saying it out loud, it takes forever.
It's going forever. I feel like this, I can picture what the pelicans are doing. So yeah. It's like, that's logical. But you're also a pelican guy. So it makes sense that DeBokey would be like,
it is. It almost feels like a red herring to have that in the
yeah, yeah, exactly. But they don't say what the fish are, and that's a real problem. Or what the pelicans are.
They probably get to it later in the paper.
You can picture what the pelicans are doing, but you can't picture what the machine learning algorithm is doing. And so I think it's ChatGPT again.
It's pushing the data upwards.
It's I was about to say, they dive and then it pushes the fish up. I'm going to go paper, you know? Let's it would not be the weirdest thing that I've read.
I'm remembering a sticking point to me is that I don't know that pelicans hunt collaboratively. I feel like I've only seen a
They pelican. I will tell you that in fact white pelicans do hunt collaboratively.
They
and
do.
That's clearly they're talking about the hunting strategy of white pelicans here.
But are you telling me this?
We're not plunge feeders. Everyone thinks that all pelicans are plunge feeders, but they're not. There's only two plunge feeding pelicans.
I think you gave me that piece of information, so I guess paper. So I'm going to guess ChatGPT.
Oh, wow. No, I will just tell you as much about pelicans as I possibly can.
Okay.
No. That is a fact you should know about me. This was a real paper.
Oh, man.
Woo!
Wow. Jordan, you are in the field. Yes. You are nailing your peers' work.
It's a 2022 paper, and it was titled Pelican Optimization Algorithm, a Novel Nature-Inspired Algorithm for Engineering Applications. The algorithm is balancing the way that pelicans explore for food, which is, but I don't know. I don't know what it's doing. No one explains to me in the paper, in the description, what the heck it's actually doing and what the fish are.
Yeah, I definitely still don't get what the fish are.
The fish are solutions, is what DeBokey has written. In this case, the fish, it's sweeping solutions into an area.
It's like a political cartoon with just way too many labels.
Fish are solutions. So many levels. raccoon and pelican both sounded like versions of reinforcement learning / control problems. which made sense as papers. And then dolphin echolocation came in, and that one just like threw me so much that I was like, I don't know.
It did seem like it was both like suddenly halfway through the introduction, it was like, and also it's about dolphin social structures. Like it's not just echolocation. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a completely separate dolphin thing.
That'll be the 2025 paper.
We will create consciousness by mixing echolocation so that the thing knows about physical space.
Yep.
With social structure, which is...
And then they'll all sing so long and thanks for all the fish.
And they'll take off into space and be like, look, you guys can't do AI anymore. We do not trust you. The moment you start to code again, we got a laser up here ready to shoot you. All right, everybody. Jordan's in the lead with 3. Sam's got 2. Sarah's got 1. Next up, we're going to take a short break and then it'll be time for the fact off. SciShow Tangents is brought to you by Rocket Money, a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. As you know, Tangents is a show about science. With that in mind, I've gone out into the field to do some personal research for this ad. Join me as I observe in his natural habitat, the money dummy, a lowly creature who lacks the natural ability to know how many subscription services he's even subscribed to.
Ah, another beautiful day being a money dummy without a care in the world. I'm one of the 75% of people who have subscription services that I've forgotten about, just sucking away at my bank account like a tick on a deer. But that's okay with me. Who needs extra money? Now to just have a drink from this pond. Gulp, gulp,
gulp. Rawr!
Oh, no.
Dear Lord, there was a money smarty in that pond, laying in wait for the hapless money dummy. Why, she's devoured him whole.
Foolish money dummy. I, the money smarty, use that extra money to become a deadly predator and get the drop on you. But here's my dark secret. I used to be a money dummy, too. Evolution happened real fast, I guess. That is, until I used Rocket Money to find and cancel my unwanted subscriptions and cancel the ones I didn't want. Then I used Rocket Money to monitor my spending and build budgets until I became the impressive specimen you see today. And I'm not alone. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all of the app's features. And if you had gotten Rocket Money, money dummy, you'd be a money smarty too, instead of my dinner.
That's really interesting. Too bad I didn't know.
And so the beauty and horror of nature laid bare. And what did we learn? How about to stop wasting your money on things you don't use? Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/tangents. That's rocketmoney.com/tangents. rocketmoney.com/TANGENTS. Welcome back, everybody. Now get ready for the fact off. Our panelists have brought to me science facts to present to me in an attempt to blow my mind. And after they have presented their facts, I will judge them and award Hank Bucks any way I see fit. To decide who goes first, though, I have a trivia question. Research has shown that plants vibrate when experiencing drought. And scientists, that's real? Okay, let's keep reading to find out what's going on. Scientists look to see what kind of sounds that might produce. Recently, researchers set up microphones about 4 inches away from tomato and tobacco plants and recorded the plants after cutting them or not giving them water. And they found that the stressed out plants made more sound compared to the non-stressed plants. While the sounds were at a frequency too high for humans to hear, the scientists did design a machine learning model to distinguish between the sounds produced by the cut plants and the non-water plants. How accurate was the model at differentiating between the two stressful conditions in a percentage?
I'm still not over the fact that plants vibrate?
They don't look like they vibrate to me. I feel like I would notice that, but I guess it's a little vibration.
I would vibrate if I'm stressed because I'm
I totally vibrate when I'm stressed
or cut.
How accurate was the model? I feel like the most accurate models are in the 70-80% maybe that I've seen, but I also am not in this field. So that would be like high accuracy in my opinion. Maybe like 62% of the time it was able to differentiate dry from hurt.
I'm going to go 75.
The answer was 70%. So Jordan gets to go first.
Woo. 70% is also, it's somehow both lower and higher than I'd expect. I don't know. So my fact is, when digital image processing research was getting off the ground in the 70s, the standard test image, so the image that was used when people published papers, when they went to conferences in order to standardize everyone's results, was called Lena, and it came from a Playboy magazine centerfold that one of the researchers just happened to have on his desk at work. That research is foundational to pretty much all image and video related AI results that we see now, including image generation, video generation, deepfakes, et cetera. And in a not so shocking turn of events, the model received exactly zero compensation other than what she was paid for the Playboy shoot, nor did she consent to have her image used in that way. Although she would go to conferences every few years and be like, yay, like, I'm happy that you guys are finding this useful. And it wasn't until I think the early 2000s that she was like, okay, can we stop doing this?
I've had enough.
I think it was only like last week, actually, that IEEE, one of the big conferences in the field, was like, okay, you can't use this photo anymore. It's slowly been phased out of the ML community as something you are allowed to submit with.
I'm looking at the photo now. I do recognize it. I feel like I have seen this picture before. It is, maybe important to say in an audio medium, just from the shoulder up. Yes. So they did not do this with an actual full body naked woman. So there's at least that, but they did do it with a woman who was naked at the time of the photograph being taken.
Correct.
That's wild.
And so this is like with a standard image they would use and try to reproduce with machine learning. And that was like the...
So not reproduce. So when people were trying to create and test out different methods of processing images, so like filtering images, transforming images, it was easier to have one photo that everyone could use to compare results and methods on.
Gotcha.
And so this was the one photo.
So if you're like all those early Photoshop things, you know, increasing edges and the making it fuzzier or changing the
exactly
hues and saturations. Yeah, gotcha. I guess there's probably not any way to have any compensation actually occur at this point.
I would imagine not. Like, academia doesn't pay people in academia particularly well, let alone everyone
like a bunch of money.
So I don't know where that money would come from.
Yeah, Adobe.
I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was about to say, if insert X major AI company would like to compensate her for her contribution to the field, then they
might
should
be
do that.
Just a good press play.
Yeah.
Like, just like, hey, want some good PR today? Here's this lady whose image was, but also probably the Playboy company owns
Don't
the picture, actually.
Playboy would go, now wait a minute.
That's just give people money.
Yeah.
This is how I feel. People who do like weird stuff, if you're a company with like billions of dollars, just like make their day.
Just mail some checks out, guys.
Make somebody's day. Why not do that?
I support this, especially if the check goes to me, but also everyone else. Yeah.
Are there other images that are used now as standard
now?
Image, like, or that replaced this? Or is it at a point in the field where you don't need this sort of like anchor digital image processing reference?
As the field has evolved and as we've gotten into like image generation and deepfakes and things like that, there's been a little bit less of a need for standard images because like you don't need a standard deepfake image to work with. I think what's happened more so is that we have like ImageNet and the really big image data sets, and that's the standard thing that everyone uses to build their models, and then you can test performance as a way of having the same baseline.
I guess I knew that would be the case.
And also in the same way, all of those images are scraped from the internet without the permission of the people who made them in them. So, you know, 50
we're still
years later.
At it.
The proud tradition lives on.
All right. Wild. Interesting. Sari, what do you got?
One of the ways that machine learning is being applied right now is called automatic speech recognition, which is basically one of the driving technologies behind any voice assistants like Google's Assistant or Alexa or my mortal nemesis, Siri. And my very basic understanding of what these algorithms do is they take the sound waveform of your speech and then chop it up into very small pieces. And then the algorithms at work try to match those tiny pieces to sounds that they were trained on. And by putting those sounds back together and incorporating other information from training data about different words and how words become sentences that make sense, the computer does its best to try and guess at what you're saying. And this is a hard thing because people mumble or have different accents or misspeak or whatnot. So the same sequence of phonemes doesn't necessarily translate to the same sentence. But as these voice technologies are in more places, people are worried about AI listening to them or surveilling them. And I feel like this is a huge paranoia that I see pop up every once in a while, is that if you talk about with your friends how much you want chocolate milk, then you'll start getting milk ads across your devices or something like that. And as far as I can tell, a lot of those targeted ads are more about what you've been searching, like if you're searching straws for chocolate milk, or if you're sharing a Wi-Fi network with someone who's searching those things, or if you were physically at a chocolate cow dairy farm or something like that, that can provide that location data rather than listening. So data privacy is, this is kind of tangential, data privacy is a concern, but your phone probably isn't recording and transmitting everything you are saying all the time. A rabbit hole I went down as I was trying to find this fact. But the fact is, even still, as an experiment in audio counter surveillance, there was a paper from Columbia University researchers that was presented at a conference in 2022 that showcases a machine learning model that tries to disrupt speech recognition algorithms in real time as someone is talking. Oh. So it basically uses similar principles to take your voice as an input. It does a series of calculations on it, and then instead of interpreting the speech, it instructs computer speakers to emit specific noise. The press release says it's whisper quiet, but there weren't audio samples, so I couldn't hear it. And the noises specifically exploit the weaknesses of existing speech recognition algorithms. Oh, so they change the waveforms in the room just enough, either by adding in interference or adding like blanket white noise or other things like that, just enough that those chopped up sounds don't get interpreted as sensible phonemes or words or sentences anymore. Even though they're fine by human ears, the computer can't interpret them. And they tested this model across various speech recognition programs and databases. I think kind of like Jordan was saying, my understanding is that these are open source and like regular databases that people train their models on, like DeepSpeech or LibreSpeech or Wave2, Vec2. And if I'm interpreting the figure in the paper correctly, this counter surveillance thing blocked anywhere from 28% to 87% of recognizable speech, depending on the system. So it's not perfect. It's more for a hypothetical spying situation than a real one. But I think it's interesting to talk about the flaws in all these technologies as much as the breakthroughs.
What if, like, when I'm doing my spycraft, I just talk, but I'm just like, hello, it's Hank.
Why do I appreciate? I think the computer would just put a big old question mark down.
Yeah.
That's how it works.
I think whoever's listening would also put a big old question mark down. What's wrong with this
guy? So if you just like had this on in your house, all it would, like at the beginning of your fact, basically you said your phone's not actually listening to you in order to advertise to you. So to have it on your house, all you'd be doing is making it so you couldn't say, hey, Siri, and it wouldn't wake up. Right.
Yeah. Okay. I think effectively, yes. But it was weird because even though there's this body of research that's saying that your phone isn't spying on you, at the beginning of this paper, they were like, in situations where you might be monitored by technologies around you. And so I don't know if this is, I fell down that rabbit hole when researching whether that was like a legit thing.
I would also like for YouTube to add that to the background of every YouTube video in which someone says, hey, whatever, so it stops setting off my various devices at home.
All right. I just love the weird esoteric history bits, like things that are like so weirdly important and will inevitably be forgotten, but are also like just shine a light on the bizarre culture that results in many of the, in all of the structures around us. So I must announce Jordan as the winner of the episode.
Woo! She was also way ahead. Very powerful lead.
It's funny because there was an article about this that literally came out last week. And so for the last week, I've been most days going through your tweet likes and your replies to make sure that you didn't see it.
Wow. Oh, no. No, what did I like? I like some real stinkers, I bet.
Hank was the one being surveilled all along.
Yeah.
I was just screening for discussion of that article.
Okay.
I cannot comment on anything else that I saw.
And now it's time for Ask the Science Couch, where we ask a listener question to our couch of finely honed scientific minds.
At Ponyoti on YouTube asked, why does it get human extremities so very wrong? By that, I assume it means AI that draws pictures.
Can I guess? Because I just have a guess, which is that like it's looking at what object is coming next, and the next thing that comes after a finger is usually a finger, and so it's just like, I guess, because like look at all my fingers, there's like a bunch of them, and so to know that there's four is a very different thing than being like, what comes after a finger? A finger. What comes after that finger? A finger. And then like, maybe on the fifth or sixth finger it draws, it's like, oh, another finger doesn't come after that one. But after the third or fourth, it's like, I don't know. I don't know what other finger comes next.
It's like, that's too many.
Can it ever like take a step back and look at what it did and be like, oh, I did too many fingers. Geez. Or when it does its sixth finger, is it, yeah, does it not ever look at it and say, oh gosh, too many fingers? It's starting to draw the finger and it's like, oh shit, I'm drawing an extra finger.
It's too late, I gotta put the finger in
now.
Too
late, I guess, yeah.
Is that how you feel as an artist, Sam, when you're drawing a guy?
No, I can erase stuff. I'm a human man. I can erase. That's the power I have over AI.
And that's how we're going to win against the AIs now. Mm-hmm. Some models can do that. It's ultimately down to how the model is built. So there's also, I think it was DeepMind made a language model where it had like inherent fact checking systems where it would like create a response and then it would be like, let me go like pull a bunch of information from reputable resources and see if what I say matches what these things say. And then if it doesn't, let me go back and adjust what I said. So there are mechanisms to do that. When you're using like, I don't know, DALL-E or like Midjourney or whatever, most of those don't really run on that. So that's why most of what you see is like weird number of fingers or like there's, you know, three fingers, but then one's coming out like this way.
Like confidently wrong.
Perpendicular to the rest of your fingers. Yeah. Which I guess depending on what data sets they use. I was born with, I guess, five fingers and a thumb. So six on each hand. Because one was coming out of each of my pinkies. So I would imagine that there isn't like a ton of that kind of data in this model, but like maybe.
I did make the mistake of typing in weird AI hands into Google, and it is nightmare fuel. These fingers have fingers. I don't like that.
In all likelihood, it's an edge case issue in that there are lots and lots and lots of photos of people's faces and people's bodies in a bunch of different positions and whatnot. But the number of different configurations of like hand positions and, you know,
hands
you may
go a lot of ways.
Obviously have five fingers, but like one might be behind, like out of frame or something like that, makes it more challenging in the same way that like ears used to be the issue and hair used to be the issue. Representing that, if you don't have enough data, it ends up being really, really wonky in the same way that language models hallucinate things when they don't have good representations of them.
The one thing that I do have to add, I guess, is what, and Jordan, you can correct me if I'm wrong because I'm coming in a little bit new here. I think the model that these sort of image generators are trained on are diffusion models, which were introduced from what I found in 2015 in a paper called Deep Unsupervised Learning Using Non-Equilibrium Thermodynamics, which is a fancy way of saying that they took an idea from physics. So this idea of equilibrium, and that if you have, I don't know, it's all, I feel like a pretty classic chemistry problem where if you have two containers filled with particles and then eventually they will like drift over and form equilibrium. But there are a lot of systems that don't form equilibriums, but things drift back and forth. And so you train these models by giving them images and then having them destroy the data in it, which is like an iterative diffusion process or what they call it. So they turn a picture of a horse into a bunch of incomprehensible pixels. And then the model learns through destroying it how to predict how to create an image, like how to reverse mm-hmm. that process and go backwards and generate something from nothing, which is yep. how you get these predictive mm. of, okay, there's a finger. Is there another finger? Is there, like, what is the shape of a hand? What is the shape of a letter? And so that's where the guessing is. That's where the prediction and statistical modeling of these image generations mm. come from, and why you can't necessarily, unless there is that like fact-checking layer, say this AI knows what a hand is or knows what the letter A looks like or knows mm-hmm. what a right. pipe looks like. Because it's all just guessing what is the statistically most likely pixel to appear next to this pixel in mm-hmm. a certain class mm-hmm. of images.
And I mean, that's also the issue that you run into with like language models doing math. It's not about the math. It's about what is statistically most likely to come after this sequence of characters.
Mm-hmm. And we as humans are really good at noticing things about other humans. Like we look at ourselves and each other all the time. Mm-hmm. And so it's easy to see like that hand is weird. That looks like an alien thing.
Right.
Whereas there could be a wrong number of leaves on a tree in the background of a picture and you like wouldn't notice necessarily.
Oh, need to be. Like there's yeah. like any botanist probably looks at any AI generated picture of any tree and is like, oh my God, what were they thinking?
Yeah. That flower has an incorrect number of petals. That's biologically impossible. But because mm-hmm. we're all humans, it's really easy to be like, oh, that foot messed up. I've seen a foot and it doesn't go at a right angle necessarily in many cases.
If you want to ask the Science Couch, follow us on Twitter at @SciShowTangents or check out our YouTube community tab where we will send out topics for upcoming episodes every week. Or you could join the SciShow Tangents Patreon and ask us on our Discord. Thank you to the Space Say on Discord, at on Twitter, and everybody else who asked us your questions for this episode. I did my best. Mm-hmm. That's what it says.
I think that's right.
Jordan, thank you so much for coming on the SciShow Tangents and sharing your knowledge and understanding with us. I wish we could go deeper. There's so much to know and so much to be excited about and scared by. If I want to see more of what you're up to, where would I go?
You can find me on YouTube. You can find me on Nebula. You can Google my name to see what else I'm doing because I'm also working on my PhD and that is taking up 80% of my brain space right now.
Imagine that. And your name is Jordan Harrod. Harrod has two R's.
Yes, like the store. Which is a reference that only really works when I'm in London, but...
Yeah, I'm like, there's a store? Should I know about the store? Everybody head on over and subscribe to Jordan on YouTube. And thanks for being here for us. If you like this show and you want to help us out, super easy to do that. First, you can go to patreon.com/scishowtangents to become a patron, get access to our Discord. Shout out to patron Les Aker for their support. There's also lots of bonus episodes and weird stuff, minions, commentaries. Second, you can leave us a review wherever you listen. That helps us know what you like about the show and also other people see them and think I maybe will watch this show. Finally, if you want to show your love for SciShow Tangents, just tell people about us. Thank you for joining us. I've been Hank Green.
I've been Sari Riley.
I've been Sam Schultz.
I've been Jordan Harrod.
SciShow Tangents is created by all of us and produced by Jess Stempert. Our associate producer is Eve Schmidt. Our editor is Seth Glicksman. Our social media organizer is Julia Buzz-Bazio. Our editorial assistant is Deepak Chakravarti. Our sound design is by Joseph Tuna Medish. Our executive producers are Nicole Sweeney and me, Hank Green. And of course, we couldn't make any of this without our patrons on Patreon. Thank you. And remember, the mind is not a vessel to be filled, but a fire to be lighted.
But one more thing. Like we talked about, some machine learning algorithms are used to sort and analyze different images like dogs, stoplights, or even pictures of human poop. Gastroenterologists already have ways to classify their patients' poop, like the Bristol Stool Scale or the Brussels Infant and Toddler Stool Scale, which look at things like stool consistency or how fragmented the chunks are. So the goal of these machine learning models, which may eventually become smartphone apps, is to give doctors an extra tool and help patients self-report their gut health more consistently. There was also a 2020 Stanford paper that looked at a similar system embedded in a bidet, and it used anal fingerprint recognition to tell which person was sitting on the toilet to associate that person's data with their selves.
That was not in the script. That was just Jordan.
It wasn't. I just knew that.
Bonus butt
fact. I did a video about it a while ago.
A wild
anus is that unique that you can
apparently
tell?
Every one is beautiful in their own way.
Specifically in reference.
Who knew that? Damn. Who was like, I wonder if the butthole looks different enough?
I feel like it was in like the introduction of the paper, because I remember talking about it in the video being like, who found out? Like, who?
Yeah.
Where's this data set? I have questions.